Question Directions, Part B. In Part B of the listening section, you will hear several longer conversations and talks. Each conversation or talk is followed by several questions. The conversations, talks, and questions will not be repeated. The conversations and talks are about a variety of topics. You do not need special knowledge of the topics to answer the questions correctly. Rather, you should answer each question on the basis of what is stated or implied by the speakers in the conversations or talks. For most of the questions, you will need to click on the best of four possible answers. Some questions will have special directions. The special directions will appear in a box on the computer screen. Listen to part of a conversation between a student and his professor.
Thank you for seeing me today, Dr. Wilson. I want to talk with you about my final grade.
Yes?
Well, I was surprised to get a D after doing so well on the midterm.
Let's see. I'll just check my grade book here.
I got a B, Dr. Wilson. I brought my test with me.
Yes, you did. I have it recorded here. And you passed the final with a C.
Then I should have gotten a C plus or a B minus.
Yes, you should have. But the problem was your attendance. 25% of your grade was calculated on the basis of class participation. And, Rick, you just didn't participate.
But I passed the exams.
Yes, I know you did, and you passed the course. D is a passing grade.
But...
I'm sorry, Rick. I gave you a syllabus on the first day of class, and the grading system was outlined in it. You received an F in class participation because you missed too many days, and that brought your grade down.
18. What prompted this conversation? Nineteen. Where is this conversation taking place? 20. What is the grade that Rick received for the course? 21. Why did Rick receive a lower grade? 22. Listen to a discussion in a linguistics class. The class has been discussing first language development in children.
Today, we'll be talking about grammatical development in children. Does anyone here have any small children at home? Diane, you have young children at home, so you will be able to help us with a lot of examples. Let's start with the kind of language that we hear from 12 to 18-month-old children who are just starting to use one-word sentences. What kind of words do we hear in those sentences?
Water, mama, book.
Those are very typical of one-word sentences, Diane. Your examples are all nouns. At this early stage, children are naming their world, and they need nouns to do that. But soon, by about 18 months to 2 years of age, they are putting two, three, even four-word sentences together and combining them in complex ways to produce a wide variety of structures. Can anyone think of any examples for this stage? Yes, Jerry.
My son is two, and his favorite sentence right now is "Daddy up" when he wants me to carry him.
Good example. In addition to the statements that younger children use, toddlers are beginning to use commands appropriately. They also start using questions. I think one of the most interesting features of this stage is the omission of small words, such as is and the, as well as word endings like ing on verbs.
Yes, I noticed that my 3-year-old is starting to put those endings on the verbs now. But sometimes they aren't perfect. He says things like, We runned fast instead of ran. Oh, my children did that.
Good observation. What is actually happening there is that he is learning the regular verb endings and extending their use to irregular verbs. That is another very common characteristic of language acquisition in children. Perhaps the most important aspect of child grammar at age 4 is the active correction of previous errors. By age 5, the grammar is not error-free, but there is evidence that children have learned the basic structures of their language. But of course, recent research indicates that several grammatical constructions are still being acquired by children as old as 10 or 11. Did you have a question, Jerry?
Yes. I was wondering if these stages are the same for children learning all languages or just English.
Excellent question, Jerry. There is evidence that the basic stages are the same for all languages.
22. Why does the professor call on Diane? What are two characteristics of the language of toddlers? 24. What can be concluded about the phrase, "We runned"? 25. By which age have most children learned the basic structures of language? 26. What does the professor say about languages other than English? 26. Listen to a professor talking with her class on the first day of the course. She will be clarifying the course syllabus.
Before we begin our discussion of today's topic, I'd like to point out a few important features on the syllabus. First, please look at the calendar. As you see, we will be meeting for 15 weeks. The last week of November, we will not meet because of the Thanksgiving holiday. But all of the other dates are listed along with the reading assignments in your textbook. In general, it is better to read the assigned pages before you come to class so that you will be prepared to participate in the discussion that follows the lecture. Now let's look at the course requirements. As you see, you have a midterm examination the last week of October and a final examination the second week of December. The midterm is worth 30 points, and the final is worth 50 points. That leaves 20 points for the project that you will be working on, and you have several choices to fulfill that requirement. You can either write a paper or make a half-hour presentation on a topic of your choice. We'll be talking a bit more about the projects in the next several weeks. Oh, yes. You will notice that I don't factor attendance into the grade, but I do expect you to be here. If you must miss class for whatever reason, please get in touch with me. My office hours are listed on the syllabus, along with my voicemail number and my email address.
27. What suggestion does the professor make about the reading assignments? 28. How are the points distributed for the course requirements? 29. What are the choices for a project? 30. According to the professor, what should students do if they must be absent? Listen to part of a lecture in an astronomy course. Today, the professor will talk about distant planets. He will focus on Neptune and Uranus. Today, I'm going to share a rather interesting theory with you. As you already know from your reading material, many scientists believe that the atmosphere of the seventh and eighth planets from our sun, Uranus and Neptune, have an outer film of hydrogen and helium. The atmosphere of Neptune above its methane ice clouds is about 85% hydrogen and 15% helium. And beneath the clouds, methane concentrations increase to more than 1%. The atmosphere of Uranus consists mostly of hydrogen, with 2% methane and 10 to 20% helium, with lesser amounts of ammonia. Because of this, the surfaces of these planets are probably covered with frozen ammonia and methane. Now, Marvin Ross of the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory in California has postulated that the methane could have separated into the carbon and hydrogen atoms that form it, and furthermore, that at the high pressure common to those planets, the carbon atoms could have been squeezed into a layer of diamonds. Astronomers at the University of Arizona in Tucson agree that the pressures on these planets, some 200,000 to 6 million times that of Earth's atmosphere, could set up conditions whereby diamonds might form. Moreover, since the two giant planets are each nearly four times the size of the Earth, and each is nearly one-fifth carbon, the quantities of diamonds could be huge. 31. What is the main purpose of this lecture? Which planets are being discussed? 33. The professor briefly explains a process. Summarize the process by putting the events in order. 34. How does the speaker feel about the theory? 35. Listen to part of a lecture in a political science class. The professor will talk about the electoral process.
In the United States, the people do not elect the president by direct vote. This is so because the men who wrote the Constitution in 1787 believed that ordinary citizens would not be informed enough to make such an important decision, and they created a system whereby a representative group of citizens, called the Electoral College, would be responsible for making the choice. The candidate with the most votes became president, and the candidate receiving the next highest number of votes became vice president. But in 1800, when Aaron Burr and Thomas Jefferson received an equal number of votes, the system had to be changed to provide for separate voting for president and vice president. Later, when political parties had become more influential, the parties nominated candidates and then chose electors to vote for them. Look at this diagram. Today, each political party in the state nominates a slate of electors pledged to support the party's nominees for president and vice president. Each state has the same number of electors in the college as it has members of Congress. On election day, registered voters go to the polls to choose the electors. In most states, the ballots list only the names of the candidates for president and vice president that the electors have pledged to support. This vote by the people for electors is called the popular vote, and the candidates who receive the most popular votes win all the electoral votes in a state.
35. What is the Electoral College? Thirty-six. Why does the speaker mention Aaron Burr and Thomas Jefferson? 37. How are the people nominated for the Electoral College? 38. What is the popular vote? 39. Listen to a study group discussion about meteorites.
Did you understand Dr. Wilson's last lecture?
The one on meteorites?
Yes. I can't understand my notes.
My notes aren't great either, but I read the chapter before class, so that made it a little easier to follow. Where did you get lost?
Well, he said that there were three basic types of meteorites, and that they were classified according to their composition.
So far, so good.
But I only have two types written down, the iron meteorite, that is mostly iron, with some trace metals like nickel and cobalt, and the stone meteorite that is mostly silicates and a wide variety of minerals.
Oh, well, you are missing the stony iron meteorite that contains varying proportions of both iron and stone. He went over that one pretty fast, but he did say that the stony iron meteorite is very rare and represents only about 1% of the meteorites that fall to the Earth. So you might want to make a note of that.
Okay. The stone meteorite is the most common.
Right. Stone meteorites account for almost 90%.
Great. Then what did he say about asteroids and comets right at the end of the lecture?
Well, let's see. That was when he was talking about the formation of meteorites. And he said most meteorites are believed to be fragments of either asteroids or comets. But then he said that some stone meteorites may have dislodged themselves from the moon or from Mars during the impact from a large asteroid.
That makes sense. Thanks a lot.
No problem. The book is really clear, too.
It is. Maybe I should read the chapters before class like you do instead of after the lecture like I have been.
39. What is the man's problem? 40. Which type of meteorite is the most common? 41. How were most meteorites formed? 42. What helped the woman follow the lecture? 43. An artist from Alaska has been invited to talk about folk art to an art history class. She will be discussing scrimshaw. Listen to the beginning of the lecture.
In the period between the American Revolution and the Civil War, about 1775 to 1865, the hunting of whales was a major industry in America. In addition to the whale oil that was a primary item of trade, whale bones and even teeth became valuable for intricate carvings that the sailors made on them. This was called scrimshaw, although no one seems to know where it got the name. There are two techniques for scrimshaw. One is to carve the bone into figures in much the same way that wood or stone is carved. The other is to cut designs on the bone and then fill them with ink so that they are more visible. This is an example of a scrimshaw from about 1800. As you can see, the results are quite beautiful and even more impressive since the artist probably had no training at all and worked with only a pocket knife or a needle. Like most folk artists, the sailors who practiced the art of scrimshaw tended to create practical objects such as tools, boxes, jewelry, and buttons. I have a number of examples here that I'm going to pass around so that you can better appreciate the intricate details on the designs. As you can imagine, because of the decline in whaling, there has also been a decline in the number of folk artists who produce scrimshaw. These pieces are quite rare and, as a result, quite valuable.
43. What is the purpose of this talk? Why does the lecturer mention the American Revolution and the Civil War? 45. Identify the two techniques used to create scrimshaw. 46. Select the object that is the best example of scrimshaw. 47. Why has scrimshaw become so valuable? 48. Listen to part of a conversation between two students on campus.
Look, I got this in the mail, and I'm thinking about applying for a card.
Oh, right. I got one, too, and so did a lot of people on campus.
So what do you think? Are you going to do it?
No. First of all, I already have a credit card, and I think one is enough for me right now.
Yeah, I have a credit card, too, but this one doesn't have an annual fee, and the interest charges are lower.
Maybe. I'm not too sure, because I didn't look into it myself. But my roommate told me that you have to carry a $200 balance to keep the card.
So you can't pay it off every month?
No, you can't. And that means you automatically have to pay interest. It's lower, but still you can't avoid it by keeping a zero balance.
What happens if you don't carry a $200 balance?
Well, first they send you a letter warning you that the account will be closed if activity doesn't pick up. Then after a month or two, they close your account.
I see. Well, forget that. It doesn't sound like such a good deal after all.
48. What is the man trying to decide? 49. Why is the man interested in the credit card? 50. Why does the man decide not to get the card?